First of all, let me welcome everybody to the workshop here. This is going to be called Note Takers Head to Head, and it's really part one because we're going to do another part in sometime in the next few months, and we're not sure when. Before we get into the actual workshop, let's go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Steve Dresser, and that's about as much as you need to hear about me until we get into the workshop.
I'm Susan Glass, and I'm a retired English professor turned freelance writer, very interested in all this technology, and not too good at pushing record buttons.
I'm John Glass. I'm Susan's husband here in California. I'm currently working as the Access Technology Manager at the Vista Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and am very much into technology, and I am a BrailleSense U2 user.
Well, we're going to be looking to you, John, for knocking me back onto the path when I go astray here, so get your baseball bat out.
Next. I'm Gudrun Bruno. I'm a telephone interpreter and translator, and I also am an occasional, I have some vocal, some voice students. I teach singing, and I've also have done some one-on-one language studies on Skype, and I am very interested in the technology, in the Braille. My special focus of interest that I'm anxious to find out is the foreign character entry, the entry, the Braille representation, what it says, what needs to happen when you switch from one for the other, because I find that the Braille note has been somewhat tricky about that, and that is something I hope to find out more about as we go on with the workshop with exploring these note takers.
Okay.
I'm Carla Hayes, and I am a foreign language teacher and a translator of Spanish, French, and German, and you know, Italian, and I'm a Braille note user, and I've been using it for several years, and I love the Apex. Sorry to see it that they're not continuing to support it, but I have come up with macros for the foreign character sets, that I have a universal macro because sometimes I have to do multiple language you know, documents, so I can probably lend a little bit of advice on that.
Oh, good, because I've never played with the foreign language stuff, so, you know, this is, I'm going to learn from you, Carla.
And I have done a little bit of that, but I don't know if I've done it the most efficient way possible, so I'm interested.
Okay.
And I'm Kate Crohan. I'm a teacher of vision TBI, and at Perkins, and prior to that in public school, and then I taught independent living skills at the Carroll Center. And I do use an Apex, and I have two students who are learning Spanish. So I don't have macro, but I have set up the Apex and have instructions for how to do it for Spanish, Braille, or other foreign languages. So I guess that's
great.
It.
Well, good.
And I'm Donna Brown from West Virginia, and I'm the accessible education materials technical specialist for the state of West Virginia. Was a teacher of visually impaired for a long time. Taught technology as the last 5 years. And I'm primarily an Apex user, but I am now starting to work some with the BrailleSense line of products.
Good.
Yeah.
And the only thing, I used an Apex, but it's been a while since I've used one. It's been probably about 2 or 3 years since I've done any work with an Apex. So my memories are kind of in the dim and hazy category. So I'm going to be looking to all of you folks that use Apexes on a regular basis to keep me on the straight and narrow here. The first part of this is going to be taking a look at the two most common note takers that we have, which are the Apex, the BrainLoad Apex, and the U2. And my reasoning for doing it this way is because these are the ones that most people are familiar with. They've been around for at least the last 6 or 7 years, and in the case of the Apex, a little bit longer than that. And they're the ones that are mostly in the school system. So I figured we start there, and then next time we'll get into the newer note takers, which will be probably a bit more speculative because, you know, there are things that are still kind of a work in progress with all of them. I guess the way I'm kind of thinking of doing it, rather than going through each feature by feature, is to kind of tackle the things that you guys want to talk about. Because I think if we start from A and go to Z, by the time it's all over, nobody's going to have gotten anything out of it. So let's maybe try and do the things that are going to be most useful to the biggest amount of people here. Does anybody want to start?
Internet browsing.
Place? Pardon?
Internet browsing.
Internet browsing. Okay. First of all, has anybody had any experience with that on either note taker?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Apex.
Yeah.
It's pathetic.
Did you say pathetic?
Yes. She did.
Oh.
Yeah,
not
I don't totally agree. I use it.
Well, if you just want to look up something in once in a blue moon, you may be lucky and it comes up. Another time when you look up something, you have to go and have a cup of coffee and hopefully thaw a pastry in the oven and have all that, and then come back and maybe it's loaded up by then.
So you primarily then, if I'm hearing you correctly, Gudrun, you've primarily had problems with speed, or do you have problems with things misbehaving once you get there?
No speed, and kind of like you, and you know how you sometimes have to go open one website and then you need to click on something else in order to open it, and it gets bogged down, and once you have a website opened up, it's pretty okay, you know,
okay.
But it's just that it takes so darn long sometimes, often.
Now, I know on a lot of pages today, they do this business kind of opening multiple tabs on a page. You know, you'll be sitting there, and it'll say, click here to do something, and it opens in another window when I'm using my PC. How does the Apex handle that well, or does it trip itself up, or... get confused.
You know, I have basically, I used to use Apex more to go on the net, you know, for Bookshare or even, Fear You Can Hear, or actually sign up for a couple of websites like a Google, Goodreads, for example, or I signed up for things. But that was after this last year, I sort of feel like it's not even worth go down to the desktop computer and do that stuff.
That's kind of where I've been with that, and I'm lucky that I have the choice. Now, Susan, you've done some stuff with the U2 on websites. Have you run into any of those kind of problems that Gudrun is describing?
I have. It's kind of a hit and miss. Sometimes I will search for something using Google, for instance, and it'll give me my search result list will come up reasonably quickly, but then I'll go to particular sites and it will hang and hang and hang and not load. And of course, this is happening more as the, you know, Windows CE system is entering further obsolescence. You know, it's sometimes I'll get in and be able to move around pretty well and, you know, move from tab to tab just fine. But it's I would say that when it works smoothly, and when it doesn't work, everything doesn't work.
Exactly, it works, and absolutely not at all.
Yeah, if I'm having a good day with it and it's loading, then I'm able to get to every link and get to everything. But if that site is cranky from the beginning, I know it's going to be cranky for the entire process.
Yeah, John, you were about to say something.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, a good point was made here that, you know, both the Apex and the U2 are operating under an old mm-hmm. operating system, which is Windows CE. And both of them are using a version of Internet Explorer, a stripped-down version of mm-hmm. Internet Explorer as their web browser. And I believe that the version of Internet Explorer they're using is like version 6.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right. 6 or 7, yeah.
And the current version, I believe, is 13, if I remember right.
No, is that right?
No, actually, it's 11.
11.
Is it 11? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what I've had a lot more experience with the U2 myself than I have with the Apex. And what I'm finding with the U2 is there are more and more websites that have changed in the last year or so that it just won't go to anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What it'll do is it'll give an error message saying something about, you know, not able to resolve the page or that sort of thing. And it's really disappointing because there are a number of sites that it used to work just fine on that it won't even get to anymore. And one of the things that HIMS did in the BrailleSense U2 to try to make using the Internet, at least on certain sites, a little bit easier for us, is they developed specific applications. For example, right. They have a Bookshare app. They have mm-hmm. an app for NLS Bard. They have an app for Twitter. They have an app for Facebook. And the idea behind these apps was to try to make the experience of using those services more pleasant for people without having to use the web browser to go to the site and try to find what you wanted and so forth. But unfortunately, as time goes on, sometimes these apps also break because
yep.
the services change their websites, and you know, it's hard for HIMS to keep up. And the development folks at HIMS have actually admitted that for the U2, there probably isn't a whole lot more they're going to be able to do with the web browser to get it to go to more pages than it does today.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that some of you may not be aware of, that in addition to the specialized apps that John was talking about, HIMS developed what they call a quick browser, which is kind of a, what would you call it, John? Kind of a third-party rewrite of Internet Explorer, maybe? Or
yeah, it was actually, version? This was actually, I don't know if this is supposed to be public knowledge, but I'll make it so. This was actually written by their Japanese dealer, their dealer in Japan. Mm-hmm. And he wrote it using the software development tools that HIMS make available. And the reason that he wrote it was he was so tired, and he got so tired of hearing from customers that the web browser was so dreadfully slow. That he wrote this quick browser to try to get things speeded up for people. And my understanding is that it does things like strips graphics out in the background
mm-hmm.
so that we as users don't even know they exist. And it when it's working properly, it definitely can load pages a lot faster than the standard
yeah.
browser. But unfortunately, it's running into some of the same, actually most of the same things that the standard browser is these days, in that if the standard browser can't get to a web page, it usually can't either.
There's a trial. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it sounds as what we need. Everybody needs one super dedicated Braille note taker and one smart Braille device that keeps up with that, you know, because the thing... You know, because I doubt that they were going to ever see a device that can do both. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
I think we're all hoping that you're wrong, because, you know, that's certainly, I mean, there's a lot to be said for a note taker in terms of being self-contained. If you have instant on, you know, that's a good thing. The Braille display is right there if you need it, and if you don't, you don't have to use it.
Great battery life.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Kate, you reacted when people first started talking about the Apex, and you've had a chance to listen to a lot of.
Yeah, if I could make a number of comments about several things that I've done. first of all, if you want to do a quick Google search, it works very well for that. You know, like define colon and then you put in a word, or, you know, anything that involves just a simple Google search, I have no issue with. I go to Bookshare, Weather Underground, the Newsline. I copy Newsline articles all the time from, you know, put them into Word documents, and I actually have a whole thing that I've written on the Apex, and
when you say Newsline, do you mean NFB Newsline, or
yes, NFB Newsline?
Ah, okay. So
I go into I can do, you know, go to the Web News on Demand, my favorite publication, and the specific one, and then find the section, and then, you know, bring up the article and copy it very quickly into a Word document. And
but those kind of sites are pretty much blind-friendly sites anyway. I mean,
The other thing that sometimes will work on the Apex, if you're having issues with a site, if you do J with backspace, when you're actually on the site and it'll say JavaScript enabled, it'll say either yes or no, and you just change it to the opposite of whatever it says. And then the bad part is that you have to go out of it and then back in again. But that will often get something to work if it doesn't. But it is not good once you get to a complex website, as you said,
right.
If you want to, you know, go to a link within a website and then another one within that, you know, another link from there, it can definitely get messed up. I do Gmail on it, even though obviously there's an email app, but I have so many emails that I get that are political about signing petitions, and I don't want to wait a week for all those to load. So I'll often go to Gmail via the internet first, and then delete whatever I don't, you know, mark, and then delete whatever I don't want before going to email. So
yeah, I've even set up a Gmail account I don't think I've done it with the Apex, but I have done it with the U2. I set up a Gmail account for the email program and was able to get that to work. And it handled it pretty well. And in fact, I was pleasantly surprised because it's an IMAP account, which, without getting into a big, long explanation of what that means, the advantage of an IMAP account is that you can set it up on several machines.
Right.
And whatever you do on one machine, you carry over to another machine. And it actually handled that pretty well.
Yeah, I have a few students who have that.
Yeah.
Well, you do, if you want IMAPs, you do it with Gmail. You set it up with a Gmail account.
That's right. But you can do that in the I've never tried it on the Apex.
Yeah, I don't know if that works on the Apex. I don't think it does.
I got a funny feeling the Apex may not support IMAP in its email
program. I don't think it does.
But the U2 does. So that's, and again, you know, HIMSS really tried hard to address some of the things that the Apex just couldn't do. And they were okay for a while until technology caught up with them and everybody started feeling the pinch of the end-of-life death throes of Windows CE and Internet Explorer 6, which has really been, I mean, if you think about it, wow, when was Internet Explorer 6 a current browser? I think that was probably...
God, how many years ago?
Eight or ten years ago.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, and I mean, right now, even on a desktop computer, if you're running anything below Internet Explorer 9, you're out of luck.
You're supposed to go into Chrome now and forget about Explorer 11 even. The death knell is tolling for that too, you know?
Oh, yeah. And it's going to be replaced by Edge, Microsoft Edge.
Right.
But right now, I think the best option out there for us is Chrome. But Chrome doesn't work on the note takers.
I think, unfortunately, you know, with these particular note takers, with the Apex and the BrailleSense U2, we're really kind of about at the end of the life in terms of what we're going to see the companies do. I mean, Apex, you know, has been discontinued. Humanware is not manufacturing anymore, and they have no more new ones to sell.
And they don't support it?
If you have a hardware problem, I believe you can send it in and get it fixed.
Yeah.
But it's my understanding that that there won't be any more software updates for it.
Right.
The U2, there has been a software update promised, version 9.0, that has that's going to have a number of nice features in it. I don't think they're going to be able to do much with either web browser as far as making improvements to their performance. I think what we have is pretty much what we're going to have.
Yep.
And unfortunately, it's only going to get worse as websites are rebuilt and updated with new technology and that sort of thing. So
hallelujah.
I think the days of using these two note takers on the internet are probably very limited at best.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And probably within that limitation, you'll do better, but not much better with the U2 than you will with the Apex. The problem is you got two things happening at the same time. One is that the operating system and browser are just too old to keep up. And the other is the technology itself is changing there's a mad scramble among web builders to code in things like HTML5 and get rid of Flash and some other things that are just meaning that they're running forward as fast as they can and they're not looking back at legacy systems. So, you know, if you don't have the latest and the greatest browser, you're done for. So, sad as it is, you know, I guess we're kind of back to, at least for me, the thing that if you have a note taker and it does what you want it to do, then keep using it. But if it doesn't, it's you know, we're all out on a mission to find something that does.
I mean, there are plenty of things that these note takers are still good for. I mean, they're great for actually taking notes and creating documents. They work well, you know, for playing books, whether you've gotten them from Bookshare or NLS. You know, the email programs in both, I think, you know, still work reasonably well. At least the one in the U2 does.
And I don't have email and Apex at all. I have given up on it, but I love the calendar and the address list. The quick notes is my saving grace. I'm a telephone interpreter, and sometimes you get a call in the middle of the night. I hop out of bed, plug in my phone because get the railroad going, and I have a quick note instantly, and I'm ready to work.
Yeah.
That is one of the I wouldn't change that for anything. There's nothing on iPhone or anything that is as fast as that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the quick note is excellent. The calculator.
Yeah.
This is Susan, and the features that I think I use the most on the U2 are word processing, email, and lately the scheduler, because I like the calendar. I like the way I can organize data.
Yeah.
And because I'm editing a number of newsletters and just in a lot of situations right now where I'm corresponding, a lot of I'm doing email constantly, and I have found it works very, very smoothly. The word processing is good in the sense that when I write something and I read it back to myself and I run the spell check and so on, it reads the way I wish it to. I'm also able to print, but I don't necessarily know the things I would really like to know that I would learn on a desktop, you know, about my formatting, about my, you know, less justified margins, about whether something is really centered or bolded. There are many limitations. I think the reason why I've been able to get away with a lot of this is because of much of the writing that I'm doing now is either through email or publications for a blind and visually impaired community.
That makes a big difference.
Which means that
you know, what I'm sending out is guaranteed readable. When I was teaching, I was using Microsoft Word and my computer for major documents, and we all did our silly things with email. I mean, we know how silly email gets. But I have to say that the email client and the way that the word processor actually works and the scheduler and even the database manager, I've been very happy with them. And those are the functions that I use all the time. So those are examples of the ways in which the note taker serves me very well.
Yeah, I like word processing so much more on my Apex than I do Word. I find Word to be clunky and, you know, very difficult to use, especially with the ribbon. And now that I'm struggling with JAWS and Windows 10, it's I don't know if it's going to, you know, settle down.
Carlo, do you do much when you do word processing? Do you do much with any of the formatting like bolding or centering?
I do.
Okay.
I do. And, you know, on the Apex, it's nice to be able to, you know, to just do the, in the formatter, you know, bold on, bold off, and you can see it appear on the screen.
Or you can do it with UED. Is that how you're doing it?
What's that?
Are you doing bold and underline and all that with UED, or are you doing it...
I'm just
through
the
format menu.
Computer Braille. I usually just use, you know, when I'm doing something in print, I just, you know, do it in the, you know, regular, computer Braille because dealing with multilingual documents.
Yep, I understand.
Is sometimes it won't keep the page numbering and the line spacing, and so I've just been doing that by hand, and I know that's clunky, but I'd rather...
You can do the, what is that? It's something to, according to ink print formatting, wait a second, I'm going to look it up, because that should help, I would think. I mean, I found that as long as you go into that in formatting... It should save it.
Go into ink print, and then sometimes I'll, you know, it'll say that it's double spaced, and then I'll go out of the document, and it won't be double spaced anymore. And same with page numbers; it doesn't do the page numbers all the time. And then the other thing that I have trouble with is the tables. Sometimes it doesn't save the tabs.
No, it doesn't. But if you go into formatting, and then you go to style, a presentation.
Yeah.
And then under that, if you go to, identical to source, and then press enter on that, if I do that after, that it saves the formatting.
Okay, I'm going to write that down.
Yeah.
So, so you go to what?
The format menu with the
the
and space. But I'm not in a text document either, so I hope this would work. And then you go to style of presentation, and then press enter on that, and then identical to source.
I'm going to try that.
One thing that I think, and I've always had the impression that the word processor in the Apex takes a much more sophisticated approach to formatting than does the one in the U2. And part of the reason that that's true is because you get to actually see the codes on the page. Whereas I think with the U2, you only get to find out whether the formatting worked or not when you run a file to the printer.
Right. The other thing that I've had trouble with the U2, and maybe I'm not doing it, but when I'm in UEB on the U2, I cannot get, like, the bold or the underline or italics or whatever. It doesn't display correct. I don't know if I'm not doing it right or... But if you go out of the document and then back in, it doesn't show it.
I think that's one of the problems with the U2 anyway, that it doesn't show things like that. It only If it's going to show it at all, it only shows it at the moment of truth when you send it to your printer.
So it's hard to teach UEB on it because
you don't know
it doesn't show all that. Whereas the Apex, it does.
Yeah.
You can do all that. You can do the underline and the underline passage and all that stuff.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, go ahead.
It's so interesting to hear what you're saying, because you guys are saying, because I was sort of like at the other end of the spectrum. Anything that I won't have formatted for printing, I'm going to go up on my desktop and do. But when I want to write, you know, like we're traveling and I want to write down, or I want to write down some stuff that I bought this today and it's size so-and-so and it's model number so-and-so, or the scratch notes that I want to have, or an idea for stories or something that I want to develop, the way you would do, you would grab a pen and paper. That's my, Apex is my favorite, you know, or the PK. I have one of those too. That's what I want, you know, because it's so instantaneous, and I don't have to start up a computer, and I can just use the word processor. There, I love the word processor because it's instantly, and I can mix and match. I can use music notation in the middle of something. I can use. I can mix characters and just have it print, send it to my embosser if I want, and call it Duxbury coded Braille.
Yeah.
And then I have it. It's, you know, whatever I have. If I mixed languages and everything, and all I need to do is have something that's written down. I don't need to read it with any kind of. I don't care about that. I just want the correct Braille representation of everything that I've written in the language that I want and so forth, and I can get a print out of it. And I love that freedom, you know,
And that, of course, is the big advantage of a note taker, is that since you're dealing with just the dots,
right,
as long as you don't have to show it to the real world,
exactly.
Who cares?
I can even do it with the real world, with my macros and things, and I write it in computer Braille. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of approaches that you can, you know, take to foreign languages. You can actually go into the tables, and you can select those. Or what you can do is, do what I did. I came up with macros so that. They look like the grade 2 characters when I'm seeing them, but they print like the print characters when they're seeing them.
Carla, mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about this macro business? Because I didn't.
Yeah, I'm curious about that.
My understanding, or at least the way I think of macros, and the way I think of them as a group of keystrokes that you string together and then just execute one command and it does them all. And I didn't think you could do that with the Apex, and yet it sounds like you did, and I'm wondering how you did it.
Yeah, so what you do is you enter the Unicode characters, and this has to be done from within a grade. This cannot be done within a grade 2 file. Okay.
Right, that's a big computer Braille, right?
Yeah, so you, mm-hmm. And what you do is you do backspace and 3-5.
Yes.
Then after that, if there are several characters, you know, tables you have to choose. You know, I mean, so you have to make sure you're in the right table. And then if you want, if the character you want is displayed, and you hit enter. If not, you can hit enter, and that'll put that character into the document. If you just want to do them one at a time. If not, you type it. In and enter, you know, for example, E acute, the first letter navigation will get you closer to the character in the list. So, if you go through and you type, for example, E and keep typing E, it'll go through all the different types of E's that you can see. But
okay,
what
so
I
do
that. Is that's clunky, you know, because you're doing them one at a time. What I do is I reassign a character to a key combination, and this is my macro. You know, it's a key combination macro. And to do this, what you do is step one is you enter the Unicode table with backspace 3-5, and then you hit space K,
and you will see the key combination assigned to the character, if there is one. Okay. Otherwise, it will tell you that the character is not has not been assigned. Then you press
A to
assign.
What was it? Space K? Is that what you said?
What?
Is it space with K?
Yes.
Okay.
And then you press the letter A for assign, the key combination, R to reassign if it's something you don't want, or U to unassign that key combination. Then you hit the enter key. You enter the key combination, that you want. Best to start, and it's always best to start with a space and a U, which is sort of your capital key.
Right.
For example, space U and dots 157 for E acute. And what I've done is I've just said 1 and 5, like A, E, I, O, or U. Okay, I just 1, 5 is E and 7 is for E acute. So if I hit, 1 with 7, I've assigned to A acute. 1, 5, and 7 is E acute, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Then you enter Y for yes. And I have a whole bunch of them. I have like 24 or 50 macros that I've assigned.
But did you actually also do, because you also need to do something to show what kind of Braille representation you want that, because E acute is depending on what languages you're dealing with, but in French, for example, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know. And so, because I did a similar thing on my PK, but what I found so difficult is that I had a hard time figure out from the settings in the Braille note whether I should change the document representation or the keyboard settings or the it was such a job to set all that up. And I know what you mean, because I have something set up so that when I get a Swedish thing with A umlaut or A circle or something, they look right in Braille. I managed, but if I was trying to tell you how I did it, I don't know that I can. It was so hard to do, whether on a desktop you just switch your keyboard layout or you do an alt combination. That's why I want something that's a little more simple to switch from language to language if you have to on the Braille, on the note taker or the smart Braille device. That's what I'm looking for.
Initially I did find sending it up for Spanish Braille difficult, but now, I just wrote out how to do it so that I could study it, and then I have another table that goes with, because I don't know Spanish, so I do know French a little bit, but so I had to memorize the, the acute versus the Enya or whatever, but I don't know, now that I've done it a few times, it's not as hard, and,
then you can use it, but I had to even call HumanWare and ask, and they finally sent me something like foreign languages extension but it wasn't part of the standard.
No,
right.
It is, there are two ways you can approach it. You can go into the various tables, for each document that you're in, and do it that way.
Right.
But
that
what I chose
like
to do is to do my macros, and it's sort of magic, because then when you go to produce the document, you decide what language that document's going to be. You'll do your your dot 8L for language.
Yep.
You choose the language, and then when you type your macros, they will display correctly in grade 2 Braille if you're in that language.
So the macro can be used, for instance, that if say an E acute, for instance, which you said was dot 1, 5, and 7, you could use
that's the way of writing it. That's not the way it looks. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah,
But could you use that dot 157 in Spanish or French assuming that both languages have an E-acute?
Yes,
they do.
And
okay,
the thing
well
is,
that...
if you've chosen Spanish for the language of your document, the primary language of your document,
yep,
it'll display like a THE sign.
Oh, cool.
Which is what
right,
it would
yeah
be in grade two. But if you've chosen French, it'll, an E-acute is like a braille cell, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's
yeah,
how
so they're different depending on the language. And that's, yeah. But, for example, I also need Swedish, and there is no Swedish setting on the, you know, so that if you have a language, so I would like to have a setting in BrailleNote that says universal, and you can have all your foreign language symbols, and you decide how it's you're going to enter them, and you decide what they're going to look like.
Well, that's
know
what this does. And the thing is, I don't know Swedish. What kind of diacritical marks are there in Swedish?
So there's a circle, A umlaut, O umlaut, and there's also E accent with the acute accent that we use. So I have set up stuff that will, and I have done what you have done. I have done made a system that, you know, that I can enter a certain braille character and so forth. And I managed to get that done on the PK. And now I don't dare to ever go in and change any settings there because I'm afraid that I won't. It will take me forever to get it back again.
No.
And then another thing that I've done is when I put the letter with a .7, that's the mm-hmm small letter, and then
right
the letter with the .8 is the capital version
right
of that letter.
Yeah, I think
okay
I've done. Yeah, that. Yeah, that. Yeah, I think it's similar. What you and I have thought similarly about this. Yeah, I just sort of wish that it wasn't so difficult to do. You know, that's what I wish there were something about the smart devices that will make this a little bit less of a job.
Well,
but
of course,
see, you can also, another approach is to get another computer table. You can do space O for options to go B Braille, and then space down to the computer table that you want, and
okay
you can go that way. But what happens, and this is something else to know, if you do, a complete reset, all of these things go
oh
away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to have to reset them, what you do then is you have to go back to get your macros back. You save your macros before resetting the unit. And how you do that is you go from the main menu to the file manager and then B for browse, and you space down to dictionaries, the dictionaries
mm-hmm
folder. But you mm-hmm don't open it. Then you backspace Y for copy, and
mm-hmm
the apex should prompt you for a drive, and you go, and I always copy it onto an SD card
mm-hmm
or flash drive where
right
you want this, to be, and then you enter, and when it says copy source file to drive, you leave the name it is, okay, assigned,
right,
and then you enter. And
right
then after the reset, you go back and you do the process in reverse to restore this back.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't
yeah
have to re-enter, because the first few times I lost them, I thought, oh, man, it takes me an hour to sit down and go through
yeah,
and do
yeah, you don't
want
to have to do that
macros
again.
Right.
No. I guess my question here is that this looks pretty neat for people who are using Apexes. Is there any capability like this on the U2? Because I've never done anything with foreign languages on it. So, John, can you help us out here, or Susan, maybe either of you know anything about that?
Oh, I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I haven't done anything with foreign languages. I mean, the one thing I would say is that the U2 does have the keystroke style macro capability. So,
give an example.
It does have the ability to enter Unicode, also. So I would assume that you could set up a macro that would go into the options menu, select the correct Braille table and the correct language. When I say language, I think what it's doing, there are two settings in the options menu of the U2. You have a Braille table and you have language. And I assume that language is selecting the speech language, the voice language. And so, yeah, obviously, you'd want to have the Braille table and the voice language set correctly. And once you've done that, the macro capability, since it's keystroke based, you know, and since you can enter Unicode, you should be able to set up anything that you need. But I haven't tried it.
Yeah.
I think on the U2, macros are a little different than what Carla's talking about as a macro. What she's kind of done is a mostly a hotkey assignment.
Keyboard mapping hotkey assignment.
On the U2, what a macro does is it, when you start recording a macro, from the minute you hit the record macro command, everything from then on that you type is recorded. So if, for
that's
instance,
actually what macros used to mean, WordPerfect and everything. Yeah,
yeah, that's what
right,
they still mean.
Right.
So for instance, on the U2, I might have a macro that would change every carriage return line feed to just a carriage return, and I would do this, and then after it got through changing it, it would go back and it would maybe delete any, you know, look for pairs of carriage returns and delete them, and, you know, then do something else and something else and something else, and, you know, so it's really just a list of keystrokes, and so it's a very different approach than what you were doing with the,
yeah, you're not actually remapping what, you know, what a keystroke does.
Yeah, you're just using it.
Yeah, I just looked up the Spanish Braille and the Braille Sense, and you're right, John. That is how you do it. Except, and then once you're in the file, I mean, once you're, the other thing you do in the file is go to space one to the Braille code, change that to Spanish, and then enter to save.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are things you can do, like there are a few funky things, like the O is like 3, 4, 6,
mm-hmm,
and then 0 is backspace, enter with 3, 4, 6. So there are a few little things that I had to really try to figure out before everything would work.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah.
Like one, like the number one in Spanish is 1, 6, and like,
mm-hmm,
A with dot 6 and 2 is B with dot 6.
Right.
That's the same.
The French Braille, they do that too now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's Braille, that's the Braille code.
That's the Braille part, yeah.
If you're not using the Spanish table, none of that's going to work right. But if you're using the Spanish table, you can just type. Well, no, I get. Yeah, you'd have to type dot 1, 6.
You have to be in the Spanish table to make that work.
Yeah, to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're talking about displaying it to the real world. If you don't care, about running it out to a printer, you can do anything you want. I mean, you don't even have to switch.
It does work with a printer because students have emailed the assignments to the instructor.
Oh yeah. I understand that, but I mean, I'm saying if you didn't care, if you were just using the note taker as a scratch pad to write your own stuff, the way Gudrun, mm-hmm, was talking about earlier, you can write anything you want. You could be an English grade 2 Braille and just write anything you want. Don't expect to ever read it back with anything, because nothing in the note universe will even know what you're doing. But,
right.
Including the internal speech synthesizer.
That's always very funny, isn't it?
Good point.
Speaking of the speech synthesizers, when I switch to the various languages in the Apex, it does a fairly good job with speaking.
Oh, they
do. Amazing. It is amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely. Yeah.
So, Carly, you don't have your default document type in Word under settings. You don't have it set for keyword Braille then?
No.
So everything comes out as.
Yeah, I think if you did set it for keyword Braille, you wouldn't be able to get away with some of this.
No,
kind
you
of
couldn't.
Stuff.
You
no.
Know.
No.
Well, I think if you set, you can set it. If you set it to you can set your language to French, and you can set you in French. You can set grade 1 or 2 Braille.
Yes, you
so
can.
So you will get the abrégé, mm-hmm, if you select, and you could then type 1, 6, you know, and then 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and D, and it would be froid. I think that they would understand that, you know, F-R-O-I-D.
Yes, I think, as I say, you've got two approaches. You can either go to the individual language tables. But, see, I can't always do that because sometimes I have a document that might have three languages.
Exactly,
I might be doing an instruction, manual in one paragraph.
Yeah, it makes sense then to do it the way
you're suggesting. And they want the French and then they want the English, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, we are getting fairly close to what would be the end of an hour here, and I don't want to cut off discussion if this is where we want to keep going, but I also don't want to make people feel like they're trapped in a workshop from which they can't escape. So do we want to continue talking about foreign language stuff, or do we want to look at some other things, or
I guess in real consideration to the other people on the call,
we
ought to
look at
other
things.
We ought to maybe do a comparison.
I can't stand too much longer, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, is there any other thing that we pretty much did chapter and verse on the web browser? Is there anything else that anybody wants to?
How about backup? How is the reliability of the backup? Because on the Apex, I've had some, or the PK, I have had some occasional glitches where I get that error message, and if you're not in, that they can't back up this file, and if you happen to not be in the room and hear what it says, you don't know what the file is that they can't do, and then you have to try and figure out where it stopped, and you know.
Well, one big difference between the Apex and the U2, and John, stop me if I'm going off the deep end here, is that the Apex has its own kind of proprietary backup that attempts to remember where your files were so that when you restore them, it puts them all back where they belong. With the U2, you pretty much just take the files and copy them to another drive somewhere, and you are responsible for kind of maintaining your own structure, so it's a much less formal backup process. In fact, I don't think there is a backup utility on the U2. There
isn't. The U2 has a backup utility under settings.
Right.
And what that does is that backs up your settings for all of the different apps.
Right.
But it doesn't back up your data. So like Steve said, if you want to make sure that you have backed up your data, I mean, the easiest way to do it is just to go into the file manager, open up your flash disk, do a Control-A to select all, a Control-C to copy, and then send that whole copy, assuming that you don't mind using up, you know, a fair amount of space on an SD card or a thumb drive, just send that whole copy to a folder that maybe you put today's date as the title of that folder. That's what I typically do. And that way, if I need to go recover something, I can actually go and, you know, find, I can look through. I have several backups on a single SD card right now, and the folders all have the date that they were created.
Right, that makes sense.
And, excuse me, the thing that I actually like about this system is that while it takes maybe a little bit more effort on my part to do it, the backups are accessible from any machine. In other words, they're not in a proprietary format of any kind.
Yep.
So if my U2 completely failed and I had to send it to HIMSS, the SD card with my backups is going to have TXT files, it's going to have DOC files, and it's going to have BRL files on it. But at least I can use those in any other machine that supports those file types, and I don't have anything that's proprietary.
Including a desktop computer, if you had to put them on there, and that you won't be able to do with the files that you backed up. Now you could take the same approach with the Apex, but then you wouldn't be using their backup utility. And I think one difference in the note takers is that the Apex was really built with the neophyte user in mind, which is to say somebody who knows nothing about computers, but they've got this thing called a note taker. They want to turn it on and just go. If you buy a U2, you will have a bit more power at your beck and call, but you need a bit more knowledge to make it happen. Because
KWB file on anything but the Apex or
True. But you have some proprietary types on the U2 as well. What is that file called, John?
You really don't. I mean, there is one file type on the U2. I believe it's called HBL.
Yes.
That they use in Korea.
I don't think is going to render well anywhere else except another U2, right? I mean, HBL.
What does it do?
Hymns Braille.
It's probably Hymns Braille. I've never actually used it because I think it really is specific to the Korean language.
Oh yeah. So
with the U2, you're either using BRL, DOC, or TXT.
Yep.
The only time you have to use that HBL, in from what I can tell, is if you are if you want a Nemesis file, and then saving that and all that is pretty complicated.
I never tried that, so I didn't know what it would do. And maybe some now, in the interest of science, I may go create an HBL file and try to open it on a desktop computer and see.
Yeah,
what
it won't work.
Oh, good.
So you're saying, in summary, with the U2 is more powerful in many ways, but you have to have more knowledge to use it.
Yes. The windows are more, I mean, the menus are more window-like.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, with the Apex, and I think I'm remembering this right, so, you know, don't shoot me if I get this wrong. If let's say you go into the word processor menu, and now you're in a list of submenus. You have create new file, open document, print document, delete document. I don't know if you have delete document.
No, embossed and set up. No, you don't have. There's no delete document.
No delete.
Right. There. I mean, you can, for example, be in the word open document or create and go down the file and go down the file manager and find a file name and you can hit.
You can do it that way and delete right there. Yeah, right. But in the word processor, you have all these little submenus. But what happens with the U2 is you go to the word processor, you hit enter, and you are in a blank document. If you want to open another document, you have to do a space O and then type in the document name. So you're doing all of it from within the word processor. And you can do some of that on the Apex as well. But it was set up originally to allow you to pick all these things from a higher level menu. And that's kind of what I mean, that it's more Windows-like.
Where the U2 is much easier though than the Apex is with these custom applications that they've implemented. If you want to go get a Bookshare book or an NLS book, or you want to go do something with Twitter or Facebook, you just launch the application and you don't have to worry about using the web browser, knowing the URL of the site that you want to go to or anything. As a matter of fact, with these apps, you will automatically be logged in to the service that you're going to want to be. And so really the U2 is way out ahead of the Apex when it comes to using these services.
Yeah. YouTube is another one. And Susan, you know about YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. YouTube. I have built a very nice personal music collection and poetry collection and used it to go look for lectures and everything. Now, the caveat is, as John pointed out earlier, that whenever YouTube does something to its site that changes something, it can break it in the
no.
You too. And then you have to wait for it to be fixed again.
Yep.
But I use it constantly. And one of the neat things that you can do on the U2 is save files that you get. So I've downloaded lots and lots and lots of things from U2.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been fun. And I will confess, I'm almost embarrassed. You'll kick me off the call. I did figure out how to use the Facebook app. I guess I was feeling a little funny during the Christmas holidays, and I used it, and I've actually been out there, and I know a little bit how it works, and I know some things I didn't know before. I also know some really silly things I didn't know before, but it's doable.
Yeah, Susan Glass, closet Facebook user. You're
You said, John, that you were using the control key. What's the control? Where is the control key on the U2?
He meant space A, or enter A. I mean.
Oh, okay.
I meant enter A. I'm sorry.
You meant code A. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The YouTube. He said.
You too can do this.
Yeah, you too can talk in English, but not always. The U2 has a lot more commands that are a combination of enter and some letter. Select all is enter A.
Okay. What about the file command, the filing? I hope that's better than the Braille note family structure with folders and directories that drive me to drinking.
Well, here again, they tried to do something, and it's
yes.
One of the few times that it fell flat on its head. They were trying to make it easy to navigate directories, and then they got tangled up in this whole business of tree structures.
Yes.
And that's why you can never quite figure out where you are with an Apex. With the U2, when you go into the file manager, it says flash. It shows you the flash drive, and if you use the up and down controls, you can move between the drives. But let's say that you don't. You hit enter on the flash drive. The next thing you're in is a list of the folders that are on that drive.
Right.
If you are sitting on any one of them, you hit enter, you're in that folder.
And then you can go to the subfolders.
Right.
Oh, that's
and then you go down go hit enter on a subfolder, or you go to the single documents further down.
Yep.
Supposed to be.
Yeah, and but you see, again, you're saying that from the knowledgeable point of somebody who's done this in Windows.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody who's never seen a Windows machine, they get on their U2, and they probably won't be bothered by the things that make you want to take several shots.
The thing I can remember, because I used a BrailleNote PK, which essentially is the same as the Apex in terms
right.
of the command structure. I used one of those every day at work for 4 years, and that directory mode, I think they call it, used to drive me nuts when I had to get to a subfolder, because it seemed like I was never in the right place when I would issue that command to go into directory mode, and I always had to fight with it to make it work.
You had to go out, and you had to open a directory that you wanted to put a subfolder in, then go out and come back in, then that directory would be the default, and then you could do the space T and go into a folder, or the other way around, folder first and then directory. Then you could go into, then you could do that code T, and then you can create a subdirectory or get into it. But that was, I hated that.
And the frightening part of it is that even as we're sitting here talking about it, we're all kind of mentally going through the process step by painful step, whereas with the U2, you just do it, it's much simpler.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never got comfortable with that directory.
No, nobody did.
It was a nightmare just to get into the subdirectories.
Yeah.
I have students who have used it, but I always get myself into trouble doing it. And in Windows, I use subfolders and sub-subfolders.
Yeah,
of course.
We all do. All us organized
super
people.
Easy to do there.
How about GPS in the U2?
I have it in YouTube. Yeah, go ahead, John.
GPS in the YouTube. First of all, the YouTube has a built-in GPS receiver, so you don't need an external receiver. Although many people find that having one works a little better because you can put it up on the dashboard of a car, or you can, you know, if you're walking along, you can clip it to the collar of your shirt or that sort of thing, so that it's up in the clear a little bit more.
Where
it receiving
the
satellites.
On it, you know.
Yeah. The Sendero has a program for the U2 called SenseNav, and it's the same. It's essentially the same program as the Sendero GPS for the MPower and Apex.
Yep.
And PK, for that matter.
Right.
It's essentially the same program functionally. Some of the key commands are a little different, but as far as what you can do with the program, it's virtually identical to what you can do on the HumanWare note takers.
Yeah. And that GPS receiver that's built into the U2, I believe, also works if you bring up their Google Maps application. Does that use the GPS receiver?
No, that does
not use
the GPS receiver. No.
Oh, all right. Okay, so that GPS receiver doesn't do anything except if you're using the Sendero stuff.
Right. One other thing that the U2 has that can be used in conjunction with GPS is it has a built-in compass. I can't remember if the Apex does or not.
No, the Apex does
doesn't.
Not. No.
For it to
See, that
work
doesn't. I mean, just personally, I'm not as interested in that, just because I don't always, when I'm like out doing errands or on the bike trail or wherever, the, you know, many places we all go, I often don't carry my Apex if I know I'm going to have a gazillion bags with me.
Yeah.
So I tend to use my phone for that kind of thing. So.
Well, and it's a little unnerving. You know, you're carrying your computer and it's open with its GPS run. I mean, it's just kind of, oh dear.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done it, but.
Oh, I know.
In a vehicle, I feel safer, but, you know, being on a route,
exactly.
If it opens so you can look at it, it's easier.
Does the U2 also have the dictionary in it? And also, is it easier to get to set alarms than going through the planner, what you have to do for the Apex?
Two questions. Let's take them one at a time.
Yeah.
Susan, you want to deliver your standard rant on the dictionary?
Well, there is a dictionary. And we still actually order it, I think, to install it.
Yeah, you have to pay for it.
You have to pay for
it's
it.
An
but
option.
Once, but once it's there, and it's easy enough to work, you can just, it's in the extras menu, and you just tap your enter key, and your dictionary will come up right away. And then you have a choice of a dictionary or a thesaurus. And you can get quick and dirty definitions for things just fine, one or two. I've used the thesaurus when I'm writing a lot. But it's not what I would call a thorough dictionary, like an etymological dictionary or lexical that's more in detail. The dictionary that comes with the Apex has much thorough and many more definitions.
Yeah, it's the OED.
It's really good. I thought it was an OED, but I didn't want to. And that's frustrating because you can also get a Spanish to English dictionary on the U2. In fact, I have it. And it's fine for daily stuff, but I often go online when I really, really need some word history, word inquiry kind of stuff. But
even sometimes for daily stuff, remember the other day we were looking up the word impeach because we wanted.
Yeah,
to know
and
what
it was a really inadequate definition.
And we did three things. We looked at the word impeach in the U2's dictionary. Then we went to Google and said define impeach. Got a more complete definition there. Uh-huh. And then I asked Alexa to define impeach and got an even more complete definition there. So, you know, and the U2 was just hopelessly at the bottom of the heap. Now, one thing about the Apex, you used to have to buy the dictionary, but I think if you were to get an Apex with the latest software in it, that dictionary is already included.
That's
I don't
correct.
Think you have to buy it anymore.
Hmm.
They somewhere along the line, Humanware decided that that dictionary was worth including in the price of the Apex, and it became a freebie for, you know.
And it's a
That's
good
very
dictionary.
Nice.
Yeah.
But that, by then, most of us had bought it anyways.
Well, there's
Thanks
that.
A lot,
but,
Humanware.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't get your money back either.
No.
I'm sorry.
So what about the clock and alarm then?
Okay, the scheduler can be complicated in either unit. From my point of view, because I use the scheduler for doing some things like recurring appointments and stuff like that, and you can do them in both note takers, but the Apex scheduler works better.
Yeah, I find it much easier to use.
The U2 scheduler has some scary bugs in it, one of which is that if you change the time zone, it shifts all your appointments back. So if you set up an appointment for 8 o'clock and you then fly out to the West Coast and you change to Pacific time and you look at your appointment and now says it's at 5.
Oh, gosh.
That's yeah. really not a good way to run a war. and the
now,
other thing, yeah.
I was just going to say, Carla, if you're talking about like a wake-up alarm, that is really easy to set.
Yeah, on the U2.
Yeah.
On the U2. If you're in a hotel someplace and you want to be woken up at, you know, 7 a.m. the next morning, that's real easy to set.
You have a timer and things like that. I miss, you know what I miss from the, we're really going back now, but the Braille Light and the Braille and Speak families is the countdown timer and the alarm clocks and the smart calendar that would tell you, okay, today is the 20th day of the year, the 322nd day of the year, and how many days to another day, you know.
Are you talking, when you say the countdown, are you talking about that? Because I sometimes want to hear, for example, I want to set the stopwatch, and I would like to hear the Braille note speak intervals, you know, because I use the stop. I want to use the stopwatch maybe to do some exercise routine, and I want to do it for 30 seconds, and I want to stop at 30 seconds and do something else. I don't want to have to go over and touch the note taker to hear it. I want to have it. Is there any, because I cannot do that in the Apex. Can you?
I'm just looking at it.
I don't think either one of them will do that.
Neither one of them will do that.
And countdown timer, I don't think exists on either one of them either, Carla. I think that was, you know.
I thought the Braille note had a count. Maybe not.
Well,
I guess.
It has a stopwatch, but when I say countdown timer, what I mean by countdown timer is one that you start it, and it says 10 minutes, and then
yeah.
a minute later it says 9 minutes, and a minute
yeah,
later
exactly.
it says 8 minutes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
The U2 does have a countdown timer. I'm looking at it here in the utility menu. Uh-huh.
Okay.
But will it speak, though? Because sometimes you want to hear... you know, can you make it speak, or does it only speak at the end of the countdown timer?
I don't know. Let me see if I can put something in here, and we'll see what it does.
Yeah, put say 2 minutes in and see what it see.
Right.
Cause it
yeah.
should
but
at least...
in the U2, you don't have to go into the planner to set an alarm like you do in the Apex.
That's correct.
Well, they're two different. Oh, so the Apex does. I don't think the Apex really has alarms like you'd like them to be, Carla, like
no,
waking up at
7
o'clock.
No, you have to go into your planner, and you have
yeah.
to set it up like an appointment to be
right,
notified.
Right, yeah. No.
It doesn't have a dedicated alarm, but
no,
you say
the U2
does.
Yeah, the U2 definitely does.
Okay, I told it to count down starting at 3 minutes, and I'll see what it announces.
Yeah. Because sometimes you want to hear the in between steps, so that
sure.
you, if yeah.
Oh yeah.
And you can't do that.
Yeah,
because you want to have, you're working on something, so you're digging your hands back into the dough, or
you don't want to have to go clog up your Braille display with that.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. You get the picture. Yeah.
have we passed a minute yet, John?
No, we're at 13, 12, 11. We'll see what it does when it gets to 2 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got 6 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2. No, it did not announce at 2 minutes.
Duh.
Sorry, folks. Your time is up.
So that sounded like the countdown on New Year's Eve. I guess the ball didn't descend. It just kind of went.
Yeah. Just kind of. Yeah. As long as you're watching.
What it's doing is it's showing me. We'll see what happens when we get to 1 minute here. We're at 35 seconds from 1 minute right now. It's showing me the seconds on the display.
Right.
And if I press C chord, it will speak the remaining time.
Sure. But that's what you don't want to do when you're baking or say.
Well,
that's
obviously.
That's why Amazon Alexa is great. You can just yell at it.
Well, but even the Alexa won't. You can set a timer on the Alexa. You can set a timer for 10 minutes, but you can't check it during the time.
Yes, you can.
Oh, you can?
Yep.
How do you do that? I didn't even know.
Just say, I always forget which it is, but I think it's just say how much time is left on the timer.
Oh.
It'll tell you, because I do it with cooking all the time.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Alexa's alarm clock is not
on. And if you have speech on the Apex, on it said I could just announce 2 minutes and running.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it'll do it without you.
Yes.
Touching.
Yeah.
But it won't tell you that you have 1 minute left. It will just announce at the end, right?
Well, the thing that I am just realizing, like I pressed space to start the stopwatch, but I don't, that's funny to word it that way, but I don't know if you could set this for like 5 minutes. Do you know what I mean?
Not with a stopwatch.
The stopwatch, it adds the time as you go on.
Exactly.
But it will announce it at two minutes or three minutes.
There goes John's egg timer.
Yeah. Okay, that's what the U2 does when it times out.
Right.
Oh, it sounds like thermal nuclear war.
No, it's a little friendlier than that.
So we don't have any of them that does what we're talking about here, that will help you while you're beating the dough.
The only way I can think of doing it, and this is a weird way, would be to set your alarm. Like if you wanted, you were doing yoga,
right.
You wanted to do something for 3 minutes. So you know, I mean, this would be really strange. Like, okay, it's 10:20, so set your alarm for 10:23.
Right. Exactly. No, I understand.
But that's bizarre because you know it's going to slow you down. I don't know. That's not a good way.
Then it's easier to use my sharp calendar. Calculator because it has. I can do that more faster with it.
I was just going to suggest that. Good.
Yeah.
Does you two have a smart calendar? Will it tell you what day of the year it is? And like the old Braille and Speaks do? I haven't found anything that does it.
You can, I don't think it'll tell you the day of the, wait a minute, there's a couple of different kinds of calendars in there. There's the lunar calendar and there's
and the solar calendar.
And the solar calendar. The solar calendar, I think, will just, you plug in a date and it'll show you what day of the week it is and the actual day.
Right.
I don't think there's anything that will I don't think you can make it tell you what day of the year it is, though.
Oh, that was great. In the
It was fun. I used to, I have a confession, if I were really tired and just sort of noodling around, I would just go, what day of the year is it right now? Just do it, see what would come up.
Believe it or not, I think you can do some of that stuff in the Windows calculator.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that thing's got crazy options that you can't even believe. It'll convert currency. It'll convert.
Really?
Yep. It'll convert currency. It'll convert metric to feet and inches.
I think the U2 calculator will do all that stuff too. There's a big long list of commands for doing conversions.
But in order to convert currency, don't you have to go on the net to do that? Because the currency changes.
Net, Yes, the net. You would have you to do currencies. You'd have to be on the net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think.
Well, yeah, to get the current rate of exchange. Yeah.
Yeah.
But can you actually do that from the Windows calculator, and it will go on the net and get it?
Well, I don't know if it'll go on the net, but it does have it. One of the things you can do is it'll convert currency. Now, how well it works, I don't know because I haven't tried it.
Does the U2 have a like a tuner, like a radio tuner? Will it sound
good? Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
FM radio.
The Apex, or
how does that compare to the Apex? You know, the O tunes, whatever.
Oh, two different questions.
Okay.
What Carla's talking about is an actual FM radio, so that if you're sitting out in your backyard, you can tune to the local stations.
And I'm also talking an internet radio tuner as well. Does it have that?
The U2
yes.
does have an internet radio
yes.
tuner.
Does it use U-Tunes? Or?
I'm not sure.
I don't think so. O-Tunes is, or U-Tunes is, seems to be quite a bit more comprehensive than the database that the U2 has access to.
Oh, so the Apex has an edge here then.
Well, the Apex, I don't think, does the Apex have a something that you can stream radio stations with?
Yeah, it has
it
the
does.
FM radio.
No.
And the internet radio also.
There's FM radio, which is just, you know, like listening to FM radio, and then there's streaming internet radio, and those are two different things.
And it does have internet radio with O-Tunes.
Okay.
I never use it, but
I do all the time.
Yeah, both of them have that. I would have to say the FM radio in either case is kind of a ho-hum feature.
It doesn't work up here where I live.
and even if you were right in the city, unless you have earphones plugged in, it's not going to work very well because it actually uses the cable from the earphones as the antenna.
Ah.
That's
okay.
So.
And I believe that both products, the U2 definitely has this feature, and I believe the Apex does as well, that when you have headphones or earbuds plugged in, there is a way to have the radio come through the speaker, even though the headphones are plugged in. So in other words, you're just using the antenna. You're just using the headphones as an antenna.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, I think both of them do have that.
So they're discontinuing sale of the Apex, and you
they've already discontinued that.
You know, note taker. You know, because you need something. You don't want to go into a touch or something. Is or is not the U2 a good option in your opinion? If you cannot get another Apex.
Well, it's a good. I think it's a good option. I think that for now, HIMSS is saying they're going to continue to produce it and they're going to continue to support it. I was at a conference recently, and HIMSS did have the U2 and U2 Mini on their table, in addition to the new Polaris note taker, which I'm sure we'll get into probably at some point a little bit later in the year when we maybe do another one of these workshops, as Steve said, maybe part two, where we look at the newer note takers.
Please, let's have that soon. I can't wait.
So, you know, HIMSS is saying right now that the U2 is going to be a current product for the foreseeable future. But as we said earlier, unfortunately, there are going to be limitations on how much more they can do with the software. And I don't think... Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see much improvement with being able to use a lot of the newer websites.
No. So if you're looking to get a note taker that does what your Apex does, the U2 is not a bad option, and in fact, you might come out ahead as long as you're not trying to play with the internet. However, one of the uncertainties of getting a note taker like the U2 is, what do they mean when they say the foreseeable future? I think they'll support it as long as they can, but you may wake up some morning to find that sorry, you're not going to get a new one.
And we're still tied then to this Windows CE, which
I think
is not a good idea. But better repair your Apex as long as you can, and then get something else.
That's what I would do, Carla. If you're happy with the Apex, and I suspect that you are based on everything you've said, if it needs repairs, get them now before they run out of parts.
And also, the good thing is that there were so many Apexes sold that. Kind of like the Braille and Speak. I mean, you can actually still find people selling Braille and Speaks today.
Yeah. Yep.
So if you really wanted another Braille and Speak, you could get one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you wanted another Apex, there may be a certain group of people that are going to, having seen the handwriting on the wall, are going to do what they can to get rid of their Apex machines. And you could probably snap one up for short money. I mean,
I see them on the Flying Blind newsletter.
Like for $1,700.
Yeah.
Which isn't too bad for, half the price,
no.
I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, actually, it's even less than half the price because the Apex, I think, went for $6,000 if you got the 32-cell one.
Well, I guess you're right.
Yeah, so.
You know what, you guys, I am going to have to go. My alarm goes off very early. Yeah.
I'm going to need to go as well.
Thank everybody for coming to this, and I hope it was useful, and that you'll be back when we do the next one.
And I just want to thank you, Steve, and all of you that, just put in your expertise. I have learned so much, and excuse me, I got a frog. This is just so informative and such a useful thing that we did.
It is.
We learn from each other.
Yes, we do.
That's what it's all about. And, John, thank you for joining us tonight. And
you're welcome. This has been fun.